to New Zealand Vegan Podcast, episode 40. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins, and this week I wanted to talk about something else that I've been thinking about lately, as per usual. And firstly, I want to mention a couple of other podcasts that are out there. Really, really important to listen to Gary Francione's commentaries. And the last one is called A Commentary of Abolitionist Principles. And I would like everybody to hear that, especially people who that I've been talking with about abolition. Like I've mentioned before, I got into a discussion on this email group about it. And, you know, there were still some people who were like, well, I don't really get it. And I'm like, well, please go and listen to this. And also myself, it was very, very helpful for me to listen to. You know, I think it is a really important concept, and we really do need to really be clear on what it's all about. And as someone who calls myself an abolitionist, I also need to be clear. I don't want to misrepresent in any way. And I believe fully in everything that I know, as much as I know about the abolitionist approach, and I desperately want to represent it to the best of my ability. So I recommend listening to that last episode and any episodes before that of the podcast, and it's on abolitionist approach. And also Roger Yates has been doing his podcast on sociology, and in his last couple of podcasts he talked about dehumanization. And that's also very useful, very, very useful for us as advocates who can sometimes feel like who might actually get quite negative about other people and forget that we ourselves were once one of those people that we're trying to change. And the thing that gives me hope is I look at myself and I look at the steps that I went through and I look at the changes that happened to me. And I didn't see the light immediately and go vegan immediately. It did take steps, and it took perseverance by other people as well. So, you know, because I was on forums and things like that, and I still had my doubts, and I was still very bewildered, and still, you know, in the beginning, I was at the very, very beginning when somebody first mentioned to me when on the Earthlings forum, I was pointed towards Gary Francione's website, because there's a lot of people doing some really great advocacy on that forum. I really do want to give them props. Desert Girl is doing great advocacy. She points everybody to Gary's website. That's how I found out about it. And she would say things like, welfare hurts animals, and I would just be like, but that doesn't make any sense. So until you really can allow, give people the time and really, really help them to understand, you know, so you do have to persevere with them. So I use my own example. And there's another great podcast, Vincent Kahane from We Other Animals has been doing a podcast as well. I really recommend it. It's weotheranimals.blogspot.com, and there's a link to the podcast, which is Animal Emancipation. And it's just great to have more voices out there. And I also want to mention Sam Tucker as well, who's another New Zealander who's promoting veganism. It's FFT Radio, Food for Thought Radio. And it's actually a radio show that's run from Hamilton, but it can be found as a podcast on iTunes as well. Also, I want to shout out Jordan Wyatt, who's a fellow New Zealander who lives in Invercargill and is one of the southernmost vegans in the world. Has started a new blog, and it's called Coexisting with Non-Human Animals, and it's at coexistingwithnonhumananimals.blogspot.com, and it's actually a podcast. Jordan does another podcast called Jay Won't Darts Podcast, but I would like to just say that in his other podcast he covers a variety of topics, because he's very interested in all kinds of things, and he's now decided that with regard to animal rights and activism, he's going to do a vegan podcast, a specifically vegan podcast. So that's just another sort of vegan podcast out there to add to the repertoire. And the first episode is up already, and it talks about a recent story in New Zealand. Well, there were calves at a farm called Crayfer Farm. If you want to know about it, go listen to Jordan's podcast. It was a big story on the news, and a lot of people were shocked and horrified by what they saw. And, you know, many people do fail to make the connection about the fact that this is just normal in a world in which we enslave and exploit living beings for their body parts. I mean, there is just such a disconnect. I will say, living in a country like New Zealand, where the majority of what we do with regard to production as a nation is animals, is animal products. There are story after story after story. I mean, you know, it's just constant because, as we all know, those of us who are vegan and who are investigating these things, you know, we know more about what goes on than your average person who consumes the products, because we make it our business to know. They make it their business not to know, because, as we know, they would rather not know, because it's painful. But that's our job. Our job is to, we have to help them to face what they're doing, just like we were, all of us, in many different ways, or some of us were able to do it on our own. That's also a wonderful thing, but it doesn't detract from those of us who got help from other people, and there are people who do need other people to help them. They're not going to come to this conclusion on their own. They're not going to wake up one day while they're eating something and say, oh my God, this is wrong. They're just going to keep doing it unless we, you know, help them to face it. So these types of stories, you would think that they would help, but they don't, because they don't confront, you know, the fundamentals. Abolition confronts the fundamentals of it. The moral obligation that we have, the fact that non-human animals are non-human persons, and that they have a right to not be property. It's that none of that is covered by these stories. They talked about, well, if you listen to Jordan's podcast, he tells you about what went on. It was basically all the information's there. But, you know, people are shocked, but it happens all the time. I mean, in New Zealand, there's a lot of stories about quote-unquote animal cruelty on farms, because what happens is they call certain extreme deprivation, well, it's all extreme deprivation, but they call enough to make up the news is what they'll investigate. So the SPCA or whoever it is, any day of the week, can go to any farm and find something, I'm sure. But they don't do that. They wait until, you know, something this sort of, I mean, the calves were literally starving to death, and all kinds of things. And so that's when the story breaks on the news. But it becomes a New Zealand, it becomes an economic argument. And I've been a little bit frustrated lately because there was a bus strike last weekend and I didn't do my stall. And then the weekend before that, for family reasons, I didn't do my stall. So I've only done it twice. And I feel anxious about that. And also I'm in exams at the moment, and I'm really supposed to not even be doing this podcast right now. I'm really supposed to be studying very, very intensely, because I haven't been studying all semester because I'm too busy to, you know, to study, and I'm too busy to work because I'm too busy trying to, you know, be an animal advocate. And I remember one of the best things that Roger ever said was back in the day when he was, before he was a professor and things like that, he was like, we were too busy to work. And, you know, I feel the same way. But anyway, I'm just kidding. I am going to do well in my exams. I will do that. I'm going to spend. So I'm not going to go do my stall this weekend or next weekend, because it's very important for me to cram for these exams. So I am a little bit frustrated, and I do feel like I haven't, oh, it's like, oh, no, I need to do, you know, I've been neglecting the cause, you know what I mean? I haven't been going on a lot of discussions. I haven't been doing, you know, a lot of online activism, which is very, very, very good activism to do, as well as community activism, as we know. And I haven't done my community activism either. So in class the other day, we were talking about ethical, because I'm training to be an interpreter eventually. I hope to be an interpreter in Spanish. It's not necessarily going to happen in this country. It's quite difficult because it's my second language, and there's not a lot of work here actually for Spanish interpreting. But anyway, in class, because I am studying it at school, and I'm going to get a diploma in it, in interpreting and translation from AUT University, we talked about ethical decisions when you want to turn down an assignment. For example, as an interpreter, if somebody wants you to interpret for a child molestation case, for example, you can turn it down on the basis of a conflict of interest. In other words, it is a situation in which you could not be impartial. You are supposed to be impartial as an interpreter. You are just a method of communication. You're not allowed to have any emotions about it. She said, any of you can think of any ideas about why you would turn down, or why? She said, well, would there be any kind of case in which you would turn down an assignment? And I put up my hand and I said, yes, I am a vegan, so I would refuse to be involved in any assignments. Oh, I said, I am a vegan, so I am opposed to the exploitation of animals. But there's this very interesting thing happened. The reason I'm saying this is because, number one, at least I talked about it, you know. It still counts, you know. We always have to have a voice. Vegans don't speak out enough, in my opinion, and I want them to. I know that not everybody can, but I wish that more people would. We need people to speak out about their veganism, to show all the different sizes, shapes, colors, and ages, and everything that we are, and you know, it's not just these people on the news pouring a bucket of blood over themselves or some ridiculous thing, like what happened the other day, some stupid guy. That's very, very important. So most people are very respectful of, I find that when you promote abolition, it's such a reasonable and a wonderful message, and it makes so much sense that it's different on forums, because online people can kind of hide behind the anonymity and they can get really abusive, but in person it's a wonderful, effective thing. People really respect it. They really, really do, in my experience. Because it's just, I mean, what, it's just so sensible. It's way more than just sensible, but it is a very sensible thing. And if you learn from Gary Francione how to represent it, and from other abolitionists how to make the statements and the arguments and respond to the questions, it's just a wonderful, wonderful philosophy, and very easy to talk about, as we know. And so she said to me, though, after she said that, she said, well, and I said, so I therefore I would not interpret for any situation in which there was, for example, in New Zealand, if there was a business meeting between a Chilean representative and New Zealand representative on wool export, I wouldn't do it because I would be opposed to it ethically. She said, oh yes, okay, I can understand that. And she said, well, morally, she said, because morals are more personal, and that's what we're talking about here. And she didn't really give me a chance to argue with that, but that was her reaction. Her reaction was pretty typical. It was, well, hold on a second. We're not talking about ethics here, because ethics is something that applies to all of us, whereas personal morals are more personal. And as I believe, and as many people believe, we are, none of us, exempt from this ethical truth that what we're doing to animals is wrong, and it is not a personal choice at all, and I strongly believe that. So, you know, that was pretty typical, but I think that she didn't know that this particular teacher didn't know, this professor. She's a lovely lady, she's from Germany, very talented, speaks goodness knows how many other languages, and she's an interpreter, and, you know, wonderful person. And now she knows I'm a vegan, and she obviously knew what a vegan was, because her eyes widened when I said it. So I really hope that I busted a couple of myths that she might have had floating around, because she's been my professor this whole semester, and we have had a really wonderful relationship, and that's the first time that I've had a chance to sort of declare my veganism to her. And so, yeah, there you go. And I finally got it into a couple of other people's heads that, you know, being a vegan means that I'm not going to eat anything that's not vegan. When it comes to anything, and it's not about being offending your hospitality or anything like that. So I think next class, or in the last week of class, my other professor wants to do a place where we all bring food from our own all countries, because there's not a lot of New Zealanders in my class. You know, it's mostly people who are interpreters who speak English as a second language. I'm like, in my class, I think I'm the only one who speaks English as a first language. Pretty much. Well, I'm definitely the only one who grew up speaking English only and then learned another language later. Some of them speak more English than their natural language, because they came here when they were children and their English is better, but they still were raised with another language. So I'm an unusual case. So, you know, food from my country, I hate to say it, but it's like a roast lamb or something like that. So anyway, I don't care about tradition, and I'm not going to partake. I'm just not. And the other day at work, as well as my, because I have been, like I say, I get withdrawal if I don't get to be active and activism and to spread the message. And there are times when, you know, we can't always do it through limitations. I'm like at my job, when I'm talking to people on the phone about their stupid credit card or whatever, I can't, I don't feel like it's possible to slip into the conversation that I'm a vegan, because we're talking about their credit cards and I'm, you know, at the bank and I don't know. I am very conscious of trying to present a it's just such a annoying position to be in, really, because if you do something like that, like if you're on the phone at your job, your temping job, and every single person that rings you in your customer service and you say, well, actually I'm a vegan and I'd like to talk about that, I think it might actually be detrimental. I don't know. But anyway, so at work the other day, there's like a new boss coming in. I mean, I'm just temping. I don't even, like, I'm just so over that job. I mean, whatever. But, and they had the meeting and they had a morning tea, and they always have all these morning teas, and I never go. I just don't go anymore. And there was actually an email sent out, but it's a new manager who's coming in. So it was a very important morning tea. It was like a, you know, you kind of sort of like, it was the manager's, like, it was a morning tea disguise. It was a disguise for a, we're all going to have a meeting kind of thing. And the person needed a response. And like I said, I've been having withdrawal because I haven't been doing as much activism as I normally would prefer to do. And so the email needed a reply. It was one of those emails that said, you know, please, you know, respond, accept or no. And so I got another opportunity to say to the person, I said, well, this email needed a reply. And I said, I abstain from animal products. Therefore, I would prefer not to take part in the morning tea. And so there you go. At least I said it. I mean, it does make, it's just always the more we can do it, the better. And every single little opportunity that we can do it, the better. And those of us who don't have as many opportunities as some, you know, who are not sort of like Gary and Roger, are, you know, professors, Professor Francione teaches animal rights and human rights, and he does a lot of interviews and he's written books, so he can do it a lot. And some other people, I'm sure, in their lives, with their jobs and things, can do it a lot. But not all of us get the opportunity to do it as much as we'd want to in our daily life. Anybody can go home and spend, you know, 10 hours on the internet doing activism, which I do, which most of us do. But that's what I'm talking about, is, you know, any opportunity. So it's nice to get, it's nice. I look for all those opportunities. They come up quite a bit, as I've said before. They do come up because it's such a huge part of our life. So any talk about food at all, and I'm like, well, I don't eat animals and I don't use animal products, so, and you know, every single time. But if there's no like I say, when I have customers calling up about their credit cards or whatever, I don't get the opportunity to educate them. And anyway, I'm just rambling. But what I wanted to talk about today was something that sort of hit me when I was walking around, and I was struck by, it's actually something that I've been wanting to mention for a long time. Like I say, there's so much to cover, and I haven't even really begun. But when I interviewed William Paul, who's a 15-year-old abolitionist from Auckland, who is an amazing, amazing person, he mentioned about how when he went vegan and he kind of woke up to everything, how liberating it was and how actually much he appreciated life, because he just appreciated being able to get up when he wanted and go and walk, you know, simple personal freedom that just, you know, none of the enslaved animals have. And so we do appreciate our personal liberties, being able to just get up and go. And one of the things that he mentioned, and I can't remember if it was in person or not, when we were talking once, me and him, he's no longer, when you become a vegan, especially in this species as well that we live in this capitalist society, we are liberated from so much advertising. I mean, it's liberating, because the majority of products that are being sold are products that we wouldn't buy for ethical reasons. Now, there is plenty of vegan products out there. You can go online and spend thousands of dollars on vegan products and stuff like that. In my country, there's not a lot of vegan, but I just, like, one of the things I remember when I kind of cleaned out my life and I got rid of, I donated as much as I could to charity, I had to weigh that up. I thought, well, do I want these things in circulation? You know, in other words, I was donating my leather shoes to charity so other people would be wearing these leather shoes, which I don't like. But then if I didn't, I would throw them away and it would be pollution. And I am very opposed to causing any more pollution than I already do, which is a disgusting amount just as a human being in the world we live in. No, and I chose to donate. I chose to donate to the City Mission of New York, all my clothing. And I think I even donated, like, you know, a personal, like, skin creams and stuff. I don't know if they would have kept them, but it was the thought of just throwing them away. I don't know. It was a dilemma. I'm glad I'll never have to go through that again because I won't be buying those things again. But so anyway, I'm sorry I'm rambling as usual, but I notice how free I am from all these things that I used to think I had to buy and all these things that other people are constantly bombarded with. And overwhelmed by advertising, it just doesn't even touch me because I'm not interested. It just doesn't even, you know, it was before I used to be affected by it. And so a lot of people are really affected by it, especially young people. And that's what I loved about William's declaration, you know, at his age where he's just like, I'm not even tempted by any of this crap anymore because I just won't buy it. So I think that there's a lot of discussions when I, the last sort of big discussion I got involved in was on New Zealand indie media. I decided I was going to write indie media articles, and I've written one so far. And it was based on a Greenpeace protest that made the front page of the paper. And somebody brought up capitalism, and I know that a lot of people are really educated about these things, politics and all these kinds of things. And I'm really not, and I really do appreciate everybody who is, who can jump in and help me with that. And I don't know a lot about history of politics. I don't know about any of this stuff. You know, I'm really new to this, all of this stuff in general. And I was very much, my whole life, very much one of those people who just didn't care about anything, really. I just cared about my friends. Nothing, you know, I just didn't ever get seriously interested in anything, social movements or anything like that. I had my own personal beliefs. I mean, after being in New York and after 9/11 and everything, I did start to, that was when I started to get politically aware, because my friends were very active politically. They even had a TV show, and I mean, I started to become aware of, you know, for the first time in my life that, oh wow, it is important to vote. I mean, I did not vote until after Bush got elected because I just didn't realize. But anyway, I'm still very ignorant about politics and things like that, and we do live in a capitalist society. But I think that I had to profess my ignorance of it because I'm not going to talk about any expert or anything. This is always just usual, just me and things like that. But when it regards to capitalism, one of the things I want to say was, first of all, when you go vegan, especially in this world, you are liberated from a lot of the sort of brainwashing, especially like a lot of the pro-violence advocates are saying is that, because we you know, they disagree that we need to confront the public, the consumers, us, our peers, you know, our families and our peer groups, that it is the biggest sort of enemy or whatever, however you want to call it, is like the producers and the advertising machines and things like that. And yes, it is true, they have a huge influence. And actually Randy Sandberg posted in a really amazing link, and I'm going to post it. I'm going to go find it and post it, about the advertising tactics used on children. It was based in America, but it's just disgusting and mind-opening, and it's a very serious issue, and I recommend watching it. But when you go vegan, the thing I like to say to anybody who agrees with those people and says, like, we have to go after them, is when you go vegan, you are no longer subjected to the lies and the misinformation and the, you know, you know, you're free from it. When I see stuff, I just don't even want to buy it. I hardly buy anything anymore because I want to simplify my life. And also because I've never really had lots of disposable income. But I still manage to buy endless amounts of crap. And now I'm liberated from that. We're liberated from that, a lot of us. Now, on the other hand, there are certainly all kinds of websites, like I say, where you can go and buy vegan this and vegan that, and they're very, you know, so maybe some people have just switched their spending, which is fine by me. That's what I want to say. I was in the supermarket the other day, and they have a lot of wine tastings in my supermarket. Isn't that cool? Well, except for they're not vegan wine, so whatever. I actually enjoy a glass of wine, so I'm not a teetotaler. I don't abstain from alcohol. I certainly don't drink nearly as much of it as I used to, but that's beside the point. So I walk around the supermarket, and there's only like a handful of wines that I 100% know are vegan, and I only buy those wines. And so I was walking around, and these girls were doing a wine tasting, and they said, "Well, would you like to try?" And I said, "Well, I need to have a look at the bottle because I'm a vegan." And you know, nobody knows that wine is filtered with animal products. Nobody. And so they said, "What do you mean? You know, there's no animal products in wine." And I said, "Yes, let me show you. I mean, it's written on the bottle in New Zealand because it's a legal requirement because they're allergens. So in New Zealand, you have to put if they're filtered through eggs, milk, or isinglass because they're considered allergens and trace amounts may remain. So they have to legally do it. The only one they don't have to legally do is gelatin, which is made from cow's hooves, as we know, because it's not considered an allergen. So I'm very careful with white wine that doesn't have anything on the back, because gelatin is mostly used for white wine. And so I don't buy white wine unless I have researched it and I know for a fact it's vegan. Whereas red wine in New Zealand, if it's a New Zealand made red wine and there's nothing written on the back, I pretty much know it's vegan, but I still don't trust it. I still prefer to buy ones that I've investigated online. And there's a winemaker in New Zealand that is a vegan winery, Wright's Winery, and they are actually vegans, so obviously their wine is vegan and they're advocates for veganism, so I would love to support them more, but I, you know, like I say, not a lot of products, you know, not a lot of demand yet. We haven't created the consumer base that we need to yet, you know. And anyway, gosh, I've already been talking for 30 minutes. And I said to the girls, yes. And I said, you know what? I said, can you go back to your winemaker? Because the wine wasn't vegan. And I told them, I said, well, this wine, the red wine, I said, look, it's not vegan. See, it's got eggs. Da, da, da. And they were all like mouth open, like, oh my God, I had no idea. And I'm like, yeah, so I'm not going to buy it. And then I said, and the white wine, I said, look, there's nothing written on the back, but I'm still not going to buy it because it could have gelatin in it and it's not considered an allergen. And I said, you know, and I try to do this with every single person I sell wine. I said, could you please inform the winemaker that it would be very useful if they would put on their wine whether or not it's vegan, because they would have a guaranteed sale. And that's my point in this capitalist society, is that we can use this to our advantage, because the vegan market, especially in New Zealand, is like this untapped market, really. If you are a producer, and I'm talking about ethical vegans, I'm not talking about Peter Singer type of vegans, or you know, vegan outreach type of vegans where they say, you know, you don't want to be extreme, it's not about being extreme, so every now and then it's okay, just let it go. No, I'm talking about ethical vegans, abolitionist vegans, if anybody who's an ethical vegan, which I hope the majority of vegans are, where if it's not vegan, they're not going to buy it. And so I was thinking, in terms of an untapped market, it's not quite big enough yet, but it's a guaranteed sale. And I said that to these girls. I said, look, there's only like 5 wines that I buy, and that's because I know they're vegan. And it's not actually my favorite wine to drink. My favorite wine in the whole world to drink before I was vegan is not a vegan wine, so I don't drink it anymore. You see, I love the wine so much, the taste of it and everything, but there's no way I'm ever drinking it unless they go vegan. And I drink wines that, the wines that I do drink, I haven't really done as much investigating as I could, so I kind of just stick to the ones that I know. And the one that has it written on the bottle is not my favorite wine, but I buy it because it's vegan. So I said to these girls, I said, if your winemaker can put that on their bottle, they have a guaranteed sale above all else. Like I said to them, I would have bought a bottle of this wine, because I actually did buy a bottle of wine that day. I don't do it all the time, but I did buy a bottle of wine that day, and I was looking for a bottle of wine, and I said, it would have been a guaranteed sale. I mean, obviously, unless it's like $40 or something crazy like that, I wouldn't have bought it. And And I said that to them, please tell the winemaker. So they learned something, and I learned something. I had this revelation, which probably is not a revelation at all, and everybody else probably already figured it out. But for me, it was like, yeah, it's a guaranteed sale. If it's vegan, I'm buying it above all else. If there is three items for sale, and they're items that I would like, or even items that I need, and out of the three, the least appealing looking, for example, or whatever, is vegan, I'm buying it because I'm a vegan, and it's not about personal preference. So if they once we create this consumer base and we alert the producers, these capitalists, these guys who are just worried about the bottom line, they have a guaranteed sale if it's a vegan product over a non-vegan product, if you're talking about a vegan. So I think that this is something that we can use. I don't know what's going to happen in the future with regard to capitalism and all those things. I'm not a huge fan of it from what I know. I think it's a terrible system, actually. The exploitation inherent in it is just obscene. But in this moment, we live in a capitalist society, and we're trying to create a vegan consumer base. I know it's not just about creating a vegan consumer base. It's a shift in social consciousness. It's a shift in thinking towards all other animals on the planet, and it's changing the fundamental way that we look at all other animals. But with regard to our daily lives as consumers, which is fueling the terrible industries that are causing the terrible suffering, that is consumer based. So I think this is something that even though it's all sort of a big unknown, we definitely can capitalize on this capitalism. So I try to tell as many people as I can, especially if they have products that are very feasibly vegan. I mean, obviously you can't go to a butcher and say, I'm only going to buy vegan meat. Well, there is no vegan meat, but you can definitely go to a bakery. Every time I go into, I mean, luckily for me, there's a wonderful vegan restaurant in Auckland now, and it's called the Golden Age, and it's the Golden Age cafe. It's absolutely wonderful, purely vegan. It's the only place I eat, except for my house. And so I can go in there and have vegan baked goods. Yay, I missed cakes and things like that for so long, because you just, you couldn't find them. Even if you went into a non-vegan restaurant and ordered vegan, there was never any vegan desserts. But here they have ice cream and cupcakes and cookies and cakes, and it's all vegan. But whenever I go to like buy a coffee from like the library coffee shop or whatever, if I'm doing that, and I just get usually like a black coffee, I always ask them, do you have any vegan? Like, I look at their big window. They have always got all these food in the display case, and I always say, have you got anything that's vegan? And they always say, and they always say no. But we need to start doing that. Always bring up that there's a demand for this. If five people a day walked into the same shop and said, have you got anything vegan, and then when the answer was no, walked out without buying anything, I'm pretty sure the owners would start to say, well, gee, we need to start making some vegan goods. It is all subtle, but I think it all helps. So I try to do it as much as I can, especially when I'm buying a coffee or something like that. I know that there is a dilemma about not going to non-vegan restaurants and buying vegan food. Like I say, I'm very lucky to have finally in Auckland a vegan restaurant. I mean, it's just wonderful. So I just only go there, and I'm lucky enough to study very close there. So I go there when I go to school. But yes, I have eaten at non-vegan restaurants and bought vegan food. And I am supporting an industry that is not vegan and that buys animal products. But in reality, even the veggie shop that I go to buy my vegetables sells eggs and ice cream. And this is not the same as these other outreach people who say, don't try to be so pure, eat some egg every now and then if it's in something, so as not to create a fuss so that people don't think that we're fanatics and stuff. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, I don't have a vegan fruit supplier to buy my fruit from. I can either buy it from the supermarket, which is full, as we know, of animal products, or I can buy it from the fruit shop, which is also full of animal products. It sells eggs and ice cream. So I need vegetables. I don't have an organic farmer's market that only sells, even if I go to the farmer's market, I don't have an organic vegetable stall, or even if it was non-organic, but I mean, I would prefer veganic, to be honest. I mean, even when we're buying organic, we're buying vegetables that have been grown with using animal products and things, which I just learned. I mean, I don't know anything about agriculture. I mean, I have so much to learn, but all of this stuff is tied in. So when I talk about how we have to accept our responsibility, that's what I mean. I don't mean if you go somewhere and somebody serves you something and it's got egg in it, just eat it because you don't want to make a fuss. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about every place we go and everything we buy. We're giving money to, unless it's a purely vegan place, which in my country, like I say, there's the vegan restaurant, there's Angel Foods, and there's this the vegan shop, which is at St. Kevin's Arcade. They are run by SAFE, which is an animal welfare organization, but they do, it is a vegan store. And that's another dilemma, because for me, I mean, I remember I got an email, and I think, I can't remember who it was from, it was ages ago when I first talked about the vegan store. It's called the Safe Shop because it's run by Safe, but I prefer to call it the vegan store. It's actually a physical store that you can go into, and it's vegan, which I don't think that really does exist anymore. So but it's another dilemma because it's run by Safe. So you go into the vegan store, and yet there are brochures supporting these welfare campaigns, which I think are actually detrimental, as we know. I think they're detrimental. They're harming the cause. That's my opinion. And I think that is based on facts as well, based on the evidence. So I know a lot of people listening will agree, but maybe not everybody. So if you don't agree, please go to the website abolitionistapproach.com and read up on what I'm talking about. But anyway, that's another dilemma. So if I go to a supermarket here in New Zealand, there's no vegan supermarkets. So I know I'm giving money to a company that's buying the sort of corpses of animals and milk and all these things when I go to buy my fruit and veggies. So, it's like, yeah. So, but I did eat at a vegetarian restaurant, which is to me the same as if they might as well serve meat there, as far as I'm concerned. But and I did buy the vegan. They do have a lot of vegan goods, and they have things that are labeled vegan, and they say vegan. And I go in there and I say, "Is this vegan? Is that vegan?" Everywhere I go, I say loud and clear, "Is this vegan? I'm a vegan, so is that vegan?" But I do it in a very sort of normal way, and people. I notice people. I was in the oh, and there's I take evening primrose oil, and I got such a fright because the woman said, this is the last bottle." And I said, "Well, what are you going to have? Are you going to have, because they're vegan caps, they're suitable for vegans, because as we know, gelatin is encapsulates a lot of the other evening primrose oils." And so she looked at the next bottle, and it said suitable for vegetarians and vegans. Which is funny to me. If it's suitable for vegans, it's suitable for vegetarians. They don't need to put both on there. Just put one. If it's suitable for vegans, it's suitable for vegetarians. You don't need to put vegetarians and vegans. It does not go the other way, however. There's a licorice that I used to love buying, that I used to love eating, I should say. That was it said suitable for vegans, and it said suitable for vegetarians and vegans, which, like I say, is a what's the word? It's redundant. But now it only says vegetarians, so I don't buy it anymore, and that's that. So they just lost a sale because it's not vegan anymore. So, in this capitalist society, everywhere you go, demand vegan products, please, and be polite and very casual about it. Let's kind of do the best we can in the system that we have at the moment, while working on this fundamental shift in our societies, everywhere we live, and it will make a difference. Every little helps. So I don't know if I made my point, but just want to make clear to all the producers. I remember when I was on a website and there was a big celebration because New Zealand, some little farm, was going to sell deer skin to Dolce and Gabbana because it was the softest deer skin in Dolce and Gabbana. And everybody was like, "Ooh, Dolce and Gabbana," and coming to little old Tikuiti or somewhere. And of course, we went on there because my friends very nicely sent me the link so that I could go and comment. And I just really clearly said, I said, if these guys made vegan products, I would be a loyal customer. It's about living by your principles, but they do need to know. I mean, in this world that we live in, with regard to consumers demanding these products. The industrial producers are exploiters, but they are responding to demand. And so I think there will be, like in Eva Batt's wonderful, wonderful essay, she talks about how there's not really a lot exploitable in vegan products, you know, but there's still a demand for vegan products. And so if I were to start a business, I mean, I have so many dreams. I would love to, my number one thing that I would like to be able to do is to have an animal sanctuary. And even if that means having a home where I can take in more than just one animal, because at the moment I literally can't. I wouldn't be permitted to where I live, and I may get evicted. I had to fight to bring Buddha here. And so, yeah, my situation right now is I'm only providing home for one refugee. It would be a dream. Another dream of mine is to open a vegan restaurant and keep it going. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that need our support. And, of course, if there's any vegan businesses, I fully support them. But the majority of them, especially in this country, aren't. So I just make sure I go in there and let them know that, you know, we need vegan products. And it's something that they should start considering, because especially once we start increasing in numbers. But even now, even with our small little numbers, even just me, I still do it. Because even if it gets one person thinking, even if the person goes home and says to his wife, what's a vegan, you know, like, and then they don't, she says, well, I don't know. And then they look it up. I mean, we need to just get that concept out there. And the best concept is abolitionist approach. So unfortunately, there's plenty of misinformation out there about veganism. But it's a choice of not mentioning it at all, or it's a choice of taking the risk that they're going to go and end up on a PETA website. That's a risk that we are taking every time we bring up animal rights and veganism. But when we do activism, where we get a chance to really talk to people, we can guide them in the right direction, which is our moral obligation. But anyway, that's my ramble for this week. I'm hoping to have another guest on soon. And I'm also hoping to talk about something that is really, really, really important, that I really wanted to get some feedback on and just talk about. And that is another paradigm shift that will help us so much, is this paradigm shift in the attitudes of men towards animal exploitation, especially in this country. It's something that I've written about a couple of times in a couple of comments, and I want to explore that. And I really want to try to also confront that. We are confronting domestic violence quite heavily in this culture, in my country. There's all kinds of very great advocacy. And I also want to hook up with the with those advocates, because I certainly am not going to hook up with the welfare groups. I will go to, you know, if there's like World Vegan Day, I plan to do something. And if they're there, then they'll be there and I'll be there too. But I don't want to, you know, be involved in any of their you know, events. But I would love to be involved in a group that is promoting, you know, is trying to educate people about violence against women and children, because I think Gary Francione does that. He gets involved with other advocacy groups, and I think it would be very useful to bring the abolitionist vegan message to places such as that, because we need to get to these people before they hear about the misguided welfare reforms. So I like to get to them first. Yeah, so that's also very important. It's another thing we need to talk about. So anyway, hope to have more guests. Hope to talk about those things coming up and any other more things. And just wish me luck with my exams. And I will have a lot more time once they're done. And I will hopefully be doing a podcast a week again. But no matter what, I'll just keep doing them. I try not to flagellate myself if I don't do everything. I can only live day by day, as can we all. So keep up the good work, and wonderful to be part of this wonderful thing. And I'll be back. Bye.